Open up your ears and open up your mind. They'll reach into your throat and pull out your spine. And when the sun blows up and the earth is gone, there's still experience grind with Kyle and Sean.
That's been coming in like a week and a half. For future listeners, it's probably already out.
We've got one episode left and 14.
Jesus, you're really far behind.
This is going to be season 17, is it not?
Maybe you're right. I thought it was 18.
I think 16 was the most recent one.
What? I'm going to look into that while you tell me more. Yeah. Are you just rewatching, or are you a couple seasons behind?
Rewatching, but we have not seen the most newest one, which again, I think is 16. That's the one with, John's wife from the first season, right? It's just 16 was the last one.
Yes. Series 17 is at the end of, March.
Nice. So yeah, we'll be right there.
Dang. But Muhammad.
Yeah. And, I forget her name, but one of the ladies is the wife of, one of the guys on the first season.
Joanne McNally or Sophie Willen?
I think it's Sophie. Is married to John from season two, the tiny guy.
The tiny guy.
Everybody, he's the tiny curly haired guy from that season.
Interesting.
I know him as Tiny because I watch like compilations of other British shows with comedians too.
Okay.
And they always make fun of John for his height. It's like a constant running theme, which is something I found very endearing. It's like, I love that there's all these comedians. It's almost like you don't get it much anymore. We used to have the Hollywood Squares, right? But that was more generalized celebrity.
The TV show?
Yeah. But the UK, they do a lot with like their comedians. Like they're on TV, like main TV a lot.
Okay.
So I just like that it's such a familiarity that they have running gags about them.
Yeah.
You get it somewhat here in America with the podcast circles.
Mm-hmm.
I know, because you know, comedians here, they all do all those. So but yeah, I just like shit like that.
Man, in the brief couple of minutes while you're talking, I looked on her IMDb and on her Wikipedia page, and there's like no information on her marital status and who she's married to, because I'm trying to figure this out because it's driving me nuts.
John Richardson.
Taskmaster is the name. Series 1.
He's I think he's series 2 actually.
Series 2?
He's married to Lucy Beaumont.
John Richardson. Oh, yeah. Okay. He's short?
He's very short.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He is. What does it say here?
Wow.
I'm on his Wikipedia page.
This is so fantastic. Productive.
Yeah. who cares? We're having a good time. And thereby association for our listeners. How tall is John Richardson, a comedian that nobody that listens to our show has ever heard of, except for Dave and Ryan?
He's only 5'8".
Yeah, see?
That's not super short.
Not very much, I guess. Yeah, what is 5'9" the average height?
Yeah, I think 5'9". Like, once I hear a dude's 5'6", I'm like, damn, that dude's short. You know? Though, I will say, clicking
that is funny that he is only
5'8". He has an ad for his live show, and it's got a squirrel on his shoulder, and it looks like the squirrel's as big as he is. So maybe he is just really small, or he found a gigantic squirrel.
Well, I think, I don't know. Also, everybody on Taskmaster and most comedians, I feel, are just freakishly tall.
That's fit. Oh man, how tall is Lucy Beaumont? I didn't like her at all. I think she's shorter than he is. But I didn't like her that much.
She's very snarky.
I think that's gonna draw me the ire of a lot of Taskmaster fans, two that listen to this show. But
again, I think Dave and Ryan, the only other two who would know British comedians as well.
Talking about Taskmaster, we're going through like not the UK, the New Zealand and the Australian ones, and they're really not that bad. The yeah. New Zealand Series 2 is really good.
Okay. I have had some interest in them.
Because they've gone in the off season, air quotes, off season, off series for Taskmaster. They've been uploading weekly episodes of those. So they'll pick like a season, whether it be like New Zealand Series 1, and then weekly they will upload another episode, almost like they're premiering a new series from like the UK.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, they're only a couple of years old. I think the New Zealand one started in 2021 or 2022. But hey, they're funny, and the Australia ones are going right now. They just released the fifth one, I think last week, episode 5, so tomorrow should be episode 6. Or today, if you're listening when this drops, maybe, question mark.
Maybe, a question mark.
But they've been good.
I'm really shocked and then also not, because the American version of that show is going to be garbage when it comes out.
Wait, there. I thought they already tried that and it was trash.
Did they? They might have.
I think that was the verdict that I heard. And maybe that's why I had heard that all of the other ones were terrible. That was like the consensus that I heard prior. And so I kind of went into the New Zealand and Australia ones with...
If there was like an American version of it, I've never seen it.
Hmm. Taskmaster America. What do we got here? American TV series. It was in 2018.
Huh.
Yeah, it was created by Alex Horn, presented by Reggie Watts.
Okay, that's kind of part of the problem.
Okay, and the contestants were Lisa Lampanelli, Freddie Highmore, Ron Funchies or whatever, Dylan Francis, and Kate Berlant.
Lisa Lampanelli is not funny.
Yeah. I mean, I still want to watch these, I guess. Reggie Watts received mostly positive reviews, though some critics really compared it unfavorably to the original series. So I guess that's one of those things where, like, if you've seen the original and you have like this really high expectation of like the Greg Davies and Alex Horn, it is really hard. It is hard to compare any series to them because there's no dynamic that's the same. Australia, it's New Zealand, the dynamic's not sure. The same as, you know.
I mean, everything's going to be a cheap copy of the original. My concern is that having seen now just, I like the way that Taskmaster is run as a show. Like, they have the formula and they stick to it, and I love that. And I feel like American, especially reality and game shows, they've got to do... Taskmaster just wouldn't be enough, Sean. It's not extreme enough, you know. I feel, and it number one, so that's annoying. And
Taskmaster, I feel like Wipeout, right?
That's what I feel like. It's probably almost has to. I'm curious if you watch it, curious to see what you think of it. I don't want to.
I don't think American viewers are smart enough, you know, to. And
I get maybe. Yeah.
Maybe it's not fair to say American viewers aren't smart enough. I think they're just like, they expect the dial to be turned up to 11 at all given times. And it's kind of fucking stupid. It's like, when I first went into this, when maybe it was you that first introduced me, it was either you or Dave. And I sat down for my first episode. I was like, man, what the fuck is this? And it really took me like a couple of episodes to get absolutely hooked. Like, I cannot consume enough. I wasn't going to watch the UK or the Zealand and Australia ones at all because I didn't care and I heard they were bad. But then I was like, man, I just need more Taskmaster in my life.
I got to have more. I need more, baby. I need,
like, hook it, slap it in my veins, dude. It's in my veins, man.
It is insane to me how much like the show grew on me in an instant, because like I've watched other British stuff before and I'm a fan of like a lot of British humor and everything, but there's just some different knob that Taskmaster turns that I also feel is very universal. It's number one, like having such a diverse cast helps bring in all types of different types of British comedy. You've got the dry wit, the sarcastic, the goofball, the highbrow, and they all mesh. And it's what makes it so beautiful. And again, I feel that's something that the America version just wouldn't grasp or wouldn't be able to translate to an American audience. Yeah. Reggie Watts as the Taskmaster is already a bold and choice. I just don't see Reggie. It's not a strict guy. No. He's funny and carefree. He makes weird, funny songs, man. That's not a hard-fisted task doler outer.
And I get judge. That, like I said, they don't reach the same dynamic that Greg and Alex have. Obviously, you can't. You know, you can't top that. But they don't try to. They try to have different characteristics. You know, it's... Are they going to be more on the mean side to the contestants like Greg is? I don't know if people can get away with it as much as he does because he's just dry about it and not mean about it. So they have to go about it in different ways. Like, is the assistant the one that's a little bit more mean? Are the contestants more mean to the taskmaster or to the assistant? You know, it's like this weird dynamic. And I think you're right that the British humor, I do love that there is something in there for, like, it's the perfect hodgepodge of personalities, and there's something in there for everybody, whether you like the old 60-year-old lady that's completely aloof and doesn't give a fuck about her score, or like Joanne, the younger dude that's trying everything in his power to sidestep the rules and cheese it. Or the person who's just sucking up to Greg at every chance, and you cannot wait to see if it's going to fail or if it's going to be a home run out of the park. I can't get enough.
We mentioned their dynamic, but you know, Greg had never met Alex before he started to do the show.
Is that so? That's why.
He'd never met him. Taskmaster, originally Alex was the Taskmaster. Because he created it, and he would do it at stand-up shows. And Tim from, like, the very first episode.
Yes.
Or the very first series. He was, like, one of the first people that did it with Alex. And that's why, like, Tim is, like, usually a task advisor on, like, all of the later
seasons. He's a consultant on the tasks.
Yeah. No. Because him and Alex are, like, lifelong real, real good buddies. But, yeah, it was all Alex's idea. Huh?
I think Lucy
is, too. Yeah. I think Lucy and him go way back. Again, a lot of them are like, especially the younger alt comics are people that Alex knows.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, when he was starting to do them, and then like they started to get hot, and like they just started, BBC came knocking, and they were looking for, Alex like knew like for a real thing, like he wouldn't be a good taskmaster. He would be a much better like foil.
Yeah.
And so then they started looking for like who could be the taskmaster, and like, yeah, they found Greg. And then, you know, the rest is magic.
And I love that they found Greg because he is one of those old heads that, like, I really enjoy a lot of the series where you have, like, Rod on. Like, the ones that know Greg have known Greg for, like, a long, long time and are just absolutely giving him, like, Rod gave him so much shit through that whole series. Like, the episode where he got a video, he hid in his closet and got a video of him sleeping. It was the creepiest thing in the world.
There's, like I said, I watch a lot of these other British, like, panel shows where, like, again, it's like all these comedians, like, they know each other. They all hang out all the fucking time. And that's a thing that I love.
Do you ever just like sit there? So I will very often just fall asleep watching Taskmaster, and I will wake up the next day and the TV's off because sleep timer, but like you could turn on the TV and YouTube's still playing. Or I look in my history because a lot of times I'll go in my history and watch something, you know, pick up from where I left off on something, and I'll just see in my search history all of these other British game shows from 10, 15 years ago, and it has all of the contestants on Taskmaster. All of them from like years and years ago. And it's so funny. It's like, you know, like the true or false one where they're trying to.
Oh, yeah.
get the other team.
Somebody tells a story and then yes. they got to figure out which one's the lie and which one's real.
Yeah. Yes, dude. That show's so good. I'll wake up and just be like, I am hooked on this show now.
If you ever get into those, man, the ones that I watch, they're called Cats Does Countdown.
That's one of the ones that comes on.
Dude, I fucking watch those all the time. And I'll have to send you one. There's like, because Greg Davies has been on there a couple times. Mm-hmm. And he does this impression of a boxer who is like literally the British version of Mike Tyson. He's he's tough, but he has the lisp and he talks funny. So people make fun of him for that. But he's a real tough guy. And like, you know, so people get weird when they make fun of him. But I guess Greg Davies does a great impression of him. And he does it one time. And then the next time that he comes on 8 out of 10 Cats, Jimmy Carr like goads him into doing the impression again. Because Jimmy Carr has brought that boxer on. Oh. And he comes out and Greg Davis loses it, dude. He's crying from laughing so much.
Why did I just spend the last 10 minutes calling him Greg Davies?
It is. It's Davies, David. It's Irish British thing. So it's weird. It's Davies. So it is Davies.
Oh, okay. Cool.
But I think some people with their, it's Greg Davis.
I think I just heard you say Greg Davis. And I'm like, oh, wait, I've heard it said that way a million times. Why'd I say Davies? But
both ways work. Crazy. This all comes out in the end, bruv.
Bruv.
You know what else comes out in the end?
What?
I should have done this whole thing in like the Jersey Mob Boss.
Please don't.
Accent, I would have.
Yeah?
Hey, yo. Hey.
Hey. Hey, you. You.
Hey.
You.
Hey. Take a walk. Take a walk.
Ah. Man.
Dude. Harold Ramis. Billy Crystal. Bobby D.
Dude, I am so glad you messaged me this morning. Because several times since last Friday, I've mentioned, I don't know what I'm recording. I don't remember. It's either Analyze This or The Whole Nine Yards. I couldn't remember what we decided on. And I brought it up a couple of times. And Sarah goes, are you ever going to ask Kyle? And I'm like, nah. And then you messaged me this morning and I didn't have to ask you. So,
yeah, I had it set up. Well, I figured like when you hadn't told me that anything about watching it, I was like, well, I'm sure he hasn't seen it yet. I'll just let him know it's on the Amazon and then we can just go.
Yeah,
I knew you'd watch it today either way.
Yeah, I always watch it today. And sorry if I sound a little low energy, folks. I had another wrestling show last night, and I am beat,
dude. Was it? Like, were they in town, or did you have to drive for a bit?
We drove to Boston, so
they were in Boston.
About 2.5 hours, yeah. At the TD Garden.
At the Garden, but not Madison Square.
It was not Madison Square, TD. It was a good time, but we got home super late and I had to work first thing this morning. So I am dragging so much ass.
2.5 hour drive?
Yeah.
What's your go-to on a drive? Are you music guy? Or you podcast guy?
Podcast. I don't listen to music.
It drives me nuts because Mandy can't deal with it. And I'm like, dude, I got to fucking listen to this shit.
Dude, that's why I got these bad boys. Folks are about to hear a sound.
Yeah.
These earbuds are always in. Like, I will always have one in as soon as it starts to die. Swap it to the other ear and go time.
I'm the same way. Books on tape were the compromise on the last road trip.
I don't even mind that.
I like
actually no, especially late at night. Like if I'm driving back,
sure, I could see that.
And it's a late night thing. Like I don't want to listen to music. I don't want to just listen to something that I've heard a million times. I need something that's new, that's engaging, that's talking. I haven't heard it before because then my brain's like, ooh, I got to listen to this. I'm going to stay awake for this. If I start listening to music or a book.
Yeah.
Especially
if it's familiar, like music that I've heard 100 million fucking times, like it's not going to work for me. I'm just going to be like, oh yeah, okay, here's that part. Oh yeah, drum fill, here we go. But say like if I'm listening to like a comedy podcast, especially like if it's two comedians and they're telling stories, fucking I'm in, dog.
Yep.
Let me tell me stories from the road. I love that shit. I will listen forever. I fucking listened to SiriusXM. I drove around for extra long because somebody was interviewing Jeff Foxworthy, and it was fascinating. Because
I was about to say
getting a start.
I was about to say that.
I love Jeff Foxworthy, dude. Redneck comedy. Who gives a fuck? It's not Larry the Cable Guy, and even some of that shit's funny, even though he's as a person is a giant turd.
I would
Jeff
prefer
Foxworthy shit's always funny.
I would prefer to just listen to Jeff Foxworthy tell stories or like tell backgrounds on stuff than to listen to his comedy. I don't enjoy his comedy that much, but I would 100% knowing his impact on comedy and that whole genre. Like, I just want to hear stories, you know, how he came up with some things, how his brain works. Sign me up for that, man. That sounds amazing.
Well, that's what I love, especially when two comedians that have two different styles start talking. Because there's one guy that, like, he writes down literally every pause. He'll write it physically out. And then he'll be interviewed by a guy that's more freeform comedy where he just gets up and talks. And they're like, how do you do it? And he's like, what do you mean? How do you do it?
Just the way different minds work, man. And I'll tell you what. The way different minds work is really showcased in this movie that we watched for today.
Hey!
Analyze this.
It's about the mind of a mobster.
How different can you get between the mind of a mobster and the mind of a psychiatrist?
Yeah.
Who also is in his own mind because of a lot of the same shit that the mobster's in his mind about.
Well,
it all goes back to your dad, right?
And what better way to showcase this dichotomy than taking one of the most famous gangster actors of all time, Robert De Niro, putting him into, I think, maybe his earlier comedic roles?
This is 1999, so I would say... Yeah.
I don't remember him doing too much comedy before this, to be honest.
What is King of Comedy...
That is not a comedy movie.
I was about to say, what is that considered? I haven't watched it, but I want to watch that for this show.
It's a really good movie. It's about a depressing comedian.
It is considered crime / comedy.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's got some funny bits because he is a stand-up comedian, but but I think that's a Scorsese too, I believe.
Yep.
And he was actually, Scorsese. They thought about getting him to maybe direct this at first, but he passed.
No kidding. Hey, Harold Ramis absolutely destroyed this. I popped when I saw his name come up.
Yeah.
He was one of the writers and the director of this flick with a fantastic cast of the who's who of pretty much anything that's mobster in, you know, the mid-90s. From Joe Vitarelli, which it broke my heart to see. He died in 2004. But
he did, unfortunately.
Also, it looked like he was dying during this film. So.
It is set because, I mean, spoiler alert, when we'll circle back to him. But, man, that dude literally carries this whole movie.
Jelly? Dude.
Up against fucking Billy Crystal and Bob De Niro. And Jelly is the best character in the whole fucking movie.
He is the linchpin that makes everything in this movie keep moving forward.
He's a damn treat. He's lovable, but he's intimidating. Mm-hmm. It's such a crazy line to walk, and this guy nails it so fucking effortlessly.
I think one of the best scenes that really exemplifies what you're talking about is when you have Billy Crystal's Dr. Sobel accidentally rear-end Jelly's car.
Yeah.
And it pops open their trunk and there's somebody and they're stuffed in there like squirming about. Right. But of course, Billy Crystal's talking to his kid and he's going through his own drama with his own dad. And so he gets out, never sees the body in there. And the other guy that's in there with Jelly is just like, what the hell are you doing? And Jelly just takes him. He's like, hey, man, yeah, fuck the cops. We don't need anything. It's all good. It was already broken. It was already busted up. No harm, no foul.
It's that mobster like casual style of talking too that like
it's so smooth.
Number one, they're able to convince you of anything, and number two, if they're not convincing you, they're able to subtly threaten you to be like, hey, you better go back to that first point because you don't want to get to point number three.
You fucking saw nothing. Remember that.
Yeah, it's cool. Don't worry. You're fine. You bring up that. The one that makes me think of, like, his niceness, but then his cold-bloodedness is when, like, Billy Crystal, he goes to kidnap him for, like, the fourth time in the movie or whatever.
From his wedding. Folks.
Yeah. But so his Billy Crystal's wedding. Trying to leave in a huff, and he pulls the gun on him, and he's like, "You can't shoot me." He's like, "No, that's the boss that can't shoot you. I ain't got no problem." And then Billy Crystal's like, "Oh yeah, this guy is a real killer. I gotta go."
I like when like you said, like the fourth or fifth time that I think this is like the sixth time that he's getting kidnapped towards the end of the movie, and he goes, "No, you got to do it. I'm a moron. They all know I'm a moron." And he goes, "Well, why would I do that? You're a moron." He's like, "Eh. When you say that, it's negative. It hurts. When I say it, it's innocent."
Again, and he's right too. It's smart. Yeah. It shows that he's not a moron. But
yeah,
I don't, it's Jelly, such a great Jelly line. Is the heart of this movie, man. For real, 100%.
Yeah. So you've got him. You've got Chaz Palminteri, like, absolutely crushing it. And he was in another flick, A Bronx Tale, with Robert De Niro. That's the whole
reason he's in this movie, is because De Niro was in that, and he loved working with Chaz so much. He's like, "Hey, we need somebody for this. Let me get my guy Chaz on it." And Chaz was like, "Of course."
That's awesome. I'd love to see it. I didn't notice that until I saw this, and that came out 6 years prior to this, so it's nice to see that they still had that connection going forward. And then, like, Bronx weird Tale, little bit movie. Stuff. Like, Molly Shannon was in here. I think this is, like...
She was. That was wild. I was like, "Oh, shit, her." And I forgot Lisa Kudrow was in it, but I was super stoked with that. I was like, "Oh, yeah!"
Right. That was right after... She was introduced, like, right after Molly Shannon was on, so... Mm-hmm. I thought that Lisa just had another weird little cameo in here until, of course, it cuts over and you find out that that's actually who Billy Crystal there is marrying in the movie. I was like, "Oh, nice." You know, I don't mind seeing more of her in this movie. And
yeah,
for the part she played, she crushed it. Exactly. It was a good character.
Like, she does so much with such a what could have been just a limited, bland, boring character.
Mm-hmm.
She's fucking fantastic, and I think she was so good she gets more to do in the sequel. Plus it's Lisa Kudrow, like, come on.
I will get ahead of the curve here and say I look forward to when we watch Analyze That.
Nice.
I very much so look forward to it, and I'll expand upon that later.
I think that's fantastic. It's all right. So at its core, and we'll come back, this is a comedy movie. Cause again, we mentioned it's written and directed by the great Harold Ramis. So this is a comedy movie set in the violent world of the Italian mafia.
Yep. In New York City.
You would think again, well, you would think, but there's so many things that has been, this was pre-Sopranos, like, exploding. I think Sopranos was getting ready to just gear up.
Sopranos came out in what, 2001?
I think 2000, maybe.
Well, regardless, right, this was time. Out prior, so.
Mm-hmm. This was 99. Oh, 1999. I remember seeing this in theaters. Yeah, I was going to say, same I think year. Sopranos was, they were right around, this was like during that mafia resurgence explosion. But kudos to them. And again, how fantastic to get Bob De Niro to still come in and play this part straight, but nail the comedy aspect of it outside of the crying. He hams up the crying so much, and I love him for it.
That is, talk about Americans love things cranked to 11. That was cranked to 11. And man, when he's in fetal position, the movie.
It's so over the top. Like everything else, it is a caricature. Well, that was weird to say.
Yeah. Charcuterie.
An Italian mobster. And this is a part that, like, De Niro can play with teeth because we've seen him do it. I also love the fact that they ape The Godfather, another part where De Niro played young. He was the young Godfather.
Mm-hmm.
Ah!
They also, like, you do see that he can play it. And, like, you don't... like, it is a caricature through 90% of the movie. And then at the end, when he walks into the meeting and you're like, oh, fuck.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he is a boss.
Well, right, and again, that plays off like what I was saying earlier with like the Vito character, how he, or Jelly, I guess, how he plays both these roles, like, and they're believable.
Mm-hmm.
The same, as soon as De Niro walks in boss mode, you're like, oh yeah, that's fucking Bob De Niro.
Dude, I just
he's
got
fucking
goosebumps.
Owning this shit. Yeah, it's it is quite well executed. I guess, like, I don't know if nobody has seen this movie. There are people out there like that. Sean, you had never seen this before, right?
Dude, this is a movie I think my dad had seen. Like this was like my dad's Happy Gilmore. He had sure, to have okay. seen this so many times. Because as I'm watching this, there is so many quotes from this movie that my sure. dad said all the time.
You sent me one of them. What, yes. You want another one?
Yeah. You want a fresh one? Yeah. Like, he would, because he would, my dad never hit me. It wasn't a big, you know, he wasn't that guy. But he would always, like, put his hand up like this. He'd be like this. And he'd go, you want a fresh one? And I never got it. I just thought it was one of those dadisms that, you know, he always said, like, I brought you into this world, I'll take you out. You know, like one of that sure. stupid shit. And sure enough, I'm sitting there. I'm like, oh. As soon as
you did the Leo.
In, yeah, the Leo.
the point whistle.
And what's crazy is if you told me prior to this, me watching this movie, hey, there's this scene in this. Hey, you know that thing your dad used to say that you want a fresh one? And with the hand up or whatever, and you gave me the pick of the litter of who says it in this movie, I never would have guessed that it was Billy Crystal.
Man, how amazing. It's like this movie was done by some fucking comedic geniuses or something. Harold Ramis and Billy Crystal? Come on.
Get mad. Hey.
Come on.
You.
Oh, man. So, yeah. So, all right. So, we'll give the roughest of overviews, and then, again, it's a comedy, so, like, the thing we really want to do is talk about what we love so much and what made us laugh. So, Bob De Niro plays a mafia boss in New York. He controls a part of New York.
One of the two big families in New York. Yep.
As he's leaving his restaurant one day, a drive-by is performed, taking out his consigliere, and
he only survives by pure happenstance because he wants to go get a toothpick. Honestly, yeah. They're trying to take him out as well.
So yes, that he was the target.
Yes, he was the target, but his best friend gets killed.
But this gives Bob De Niro's character extreme PTSD, and he begins to have panic attacks. And this is funny that this came out the same year as The Sopranos, because it's literally the exact same premise. There's a mobster boss who, under the stress of everything that comes with running a mafia family in the current era, begins to have panic attacks. So they need to see a psychiatrist or a shrink. Tony Soprano mm-hmm. does it, and Bob De Niro does it here. But he doesn't do it right off the bat. It takes this happenstance meeting between Billy Crystal and Jelly, where he gives him his card. He's like, well, hey, if you change your mind after this accident, you know, here's my card. And he's like, you're a doctor? He's like, yeah, I'm a psychiatrist. Oh, you're a head doctor? And that sticks with Jelly. So that later, when, again, just, brilliant. Little set dressings.
I love.
Believable enough.
I love the attention to detail in De Niro's character, Paul Vitti, who recognizes he's a head mob boss, right? And that's a major sign of weakness. He needs a doctor. He needs head, whatever. He's going to be removed, killed, whatever. His little tap dancing around, whether it be talking to Jelly about getting a head doctor, and he's like, no, it's for a friend. And Jelly, one of my favorite lines in this movie, he goes, hey, boss, let me ask you something. Is that friend me? And Vitti just goes, yes. Dude, that made me laugh so hard. And then it carries over to the meeting with Billy Crystal's Ben Sobel, where they boot the guy out who's in the middle of a session in another one of the funniest scenes of the movie. this patient is just somebody who just says yes to everything so fast and doesn't want confrontation. And Billy Crystal's like, you got to stand up for yourself. So they're like, beat it. $100. And he goes, 300. So they give him 300 and he goes, yeah, I stood up for myself. Laugh so hard. But
it was I love that too, because Billy Crystal's trying to tell him, he's like, this guy's crazy. And the guy goes, make it 300. And he goes, not that fucking crazy. That's another thing. I love that this is a comedy movie rated R. Number one, these are so rare, even today standards. You will hardly ever see R-rated comedy anymore. They always go PG-13 to get the young boy crowd now.
Actually, honestly, I am a little surprised that this is rated R. For language?
Yeah, because there is so much language and some violence, even though, like, the most extreme thing is Billy Crystal getting shot in the shoulder at the end.
Man, and that didn't even really have any blood. I didn't even think that the language was super egregious.
But see, it's funny you say that.
There's 85 uses of fucking experience.
That's what I'm saying. You say that because, number one, you listen to me talk all the time.
Yeah.
And number two, it's because they are mafia guys and they talk like they would. If this was a PG-13 movie and they couldn't curse, it would sound so much more awkward and weird and it would pull you out. But the way that they would just casually, hey, you know this fucking guy over here.
Yeah.
That's how it would, it flows.
It just sounds natural. And like, the F word is in every other sentence that I use. So it just like flows so nice. You know, when you hear somebody, it's just like part of their natural dialect. And then you hear it in a movie and you don't hear it. It's actually blowing me away that I see 85 uses of fucking
it. That's what I'm saying. I was like, oh yeah, this is an R-rated comedy. They go hard on it, man. Jesus. Again, as they should, they're mafia bosses.
Yeah.
Man. They do have the scene though where like, it's the rare time when I think a sex scene works when it's being funny. Like, I don't think, dude, you can just show us the after in most sex scenes, but we've been over this 1,000 times. But like in this one, it's the funny thing where like they're adults having sex, but they're both fully clothed. Yep. She's wearing like full lingerie that shows nothing. And he's wearing his boxers. Like
that's another thing, like between that and the complete lack of blood, that in my head, I was so clouded on the language on this. But as you were saying, you know, he's having panic attacks and by happenstance, Jelly runs into Sobel and connects them. And guess what? You start helping out a mob boss and you do anything, you're now connected to this guy. Yeah. I love how Crystal doesn't know any of his cohorts, but he knows Vidi. Like, everybody knows Vidi, knows who he is, knows what he stands for. He's a big mob boss. He's like, you know who I am? Yes. No, you don't. You seen me in the paper? Yes. No, you didn't. Like, that exertion of control from the second that he walks into the room is so great. And that the dynamic in this movie, it's really cool to see how it flows, where he starts completely in control because he refuses to let go to Sobel. And by the end of it, he's completely kind of released to it. But even in that scene, he's like, all right, well, when I'm back from vacation, you know, or I can't take anybody on, I'm full of patients, I'm going on vacation. Where are you going? I don't tell patients that. Where are you going?
He immediately tells. Again, I love this dichotomy of like, really, in that situation, how do you say no to a mob boss?
Yeah.
You don't. You fucking don't.
And it even got me thinking, like, how easy would that be to, if you're just, it's a complete dickhead thing to do, but if someone's like, I don't really tell people that, and you're just like, where are you going? It's so disarming.
Yeah.
Like, it was disarming to me, who was laying in bed watching this movie. That was like, damn, that was wild.
And it is a power play. Like, that's what, and it is fun to see, like, the power dynamic shift, like, throughout the movie. And it's not even that Billy Crystal wants to have the power over him. He needs him to realize that, like, you got to get past this mob boss bullshit exterior you've erected, or else you're never going to get over this. Mm-hmm. And I love, like, Bob De Niro denying it and, like, refusing it forever. He's like, nah, yeah. nah, you're wrong. I'm just going to tell you how I feel, and then I feel better. And then he's like, all right, good. And then, like, that same night, Jelly's breaking into his house and waking him up, and he's like, Doc, he's not better. You got to come with me. He's like, what are you doing?
And that wasn't even his house. That was at the hotel in Florida.
Yeah. Like,
he couldn't get an erection back in New York, so they flew down to Florida.
That's right. It's so insane, dude.
To be like, God, this movie's hilarious. Nah, you're on the payroll now. You're 24/7. Talk to the boss.
Here's the one thing in this movie that, like, doesn't make sense to me, and they just blow right fucking over it and past it, and nobody cares, and it's fine, so it works in the movie. Why the fuck are there two weddings?
Because the first wedding was never, it was interrupted. They called off the wedding because somebody was murdered. Someone died.
Is that what? Okay.
Yeah,
I guess they threw that second. Yeah.
Okay. During the ceremony, it was before the ID. I remember that part, but I thought that they would still. Seven stories.
I thought that they would still have gone through with, like, I mean, you're there, but I don't know.
Bro, they're still pulling capers out of the dude's forehead, all right?
I love that. Fucking when De Niro's talking about how he's like, I watched a commercial with a kid playing catch with his dad and I cried for 45 minutes. When he's having, he's just breaking down.
And then you see a variation of a commercial later on in the movie, but it's an investment firm commercial.
And he's just losing it. He can't go to the meeting.
You don't want to be like your dad usually, but now you do. Invest.
Oh, man. This fucking scene at the hotel, though, when, like, after they've thrown the guy out the window and he goes to confront him. Dude, I am looking for that jacket. Whatever Bob De Niro had on is, like, I want that. It's like, it's a windbreaker zip-up, but the sleeves stop at the elbow, but they've still got, like, that jacket.
The fringe?
Stitched elastic.
Yeah.
That was the coolest fucking jacket I've ever seen. It was like a members-only jacket that you push up to the elbows. But it just stops.
But
the
you don't have to push it up.
Dude, I want one so bad. I cannot find it. I'm looking. Audience, if you know what it is, fucking help me out here. I want one.
Yeah.
Send me
if
a link.
If you don't know what he's talking about, watch this movie. You won't regret it. Like, I wholeheartedly, before we even get to the ratings, I wholeheartedly say if you haven't seen this movie, watch this movie.
It's also, it's funny to me because, again, we're going to talk about just scenes that we love because it's a comedy. It's so rare for a comedy to age well. So often, like, they're pop culture-y or they're, like, just their jokes age out of what is currently funny, whether it be, you know, casual racism, sexism.
Anachronistically, this movie isn't that far off.
No. And, like, but, and the jokes, like I said, they still work because they're in this mafia coding, like you don't have all that shit. We're making fun of the mafia.
Everybody has their idea of mafia in their head, and this fits it to the T. You know, who's thinking of 2017 mafia? Nobody.
Yeah.
At all. It's this 90s, glow up or pump to 11 visual.
Yes. But, that's what I was pleased because this is a comedy I could watch with, like, well, when they're a little older, but my nieces and nephews, this would still be funny. Like, the jokes aren't dated.
Mm-hmm. If they know anything about, like, mafia, I guess.
Sure.
Or if they've heard about it. I could, like, see that's the only thing. I think for us watching it, you know, we went through that time period where, you know, mob stuff was a hit. Those were, like, in the zeitgeist of whenever we were of pop culture.
There was
a
fucking short cartoon on Animaniacs called The Good Pigeons that was a riff off of Goodfellas and a children's cartoon.
Oh, that's so wild to me.
Yeah.
But back to this, you know, he gets help. And of course, he's got such an ego about it. And he's so used to not being told no or anything like that, that the moment that he feels any sort of help, he's like, oh, you're a genius. You're a genius. I'm cured. I'm cured. And he goes off.
Yeah.
And of course, it's done next to nothing. He's had a 4-minute long therapy session. And so everything just keeps getting worse. And he's like, he'll come back and be like, you didn't even fix me. What the hell's going on? So it's just like this constant thing of him leaving thinking he's fixed, coming back and being like, Doc, I need help. All leading up to this big, big family meeting at the end of the movie, which also we are informed like the FBI is tracking, yada, 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 because they're anticipating it be a big bloodbath of all of like the big mob bosses from across America meeting for the first time since 1957.
Yeah, one when they were all arrested. Location. Spoiler alert. Fuck, what was I going to say? There was something about the mobster stuff.
And as you try to think of that, as one would imagine, it's mobs, it's mafias, rival families. People are trying to gain allegiances with other things. So you've got double crossing happening during the movie from one family to another. People getting set up. You think, you know, they find out that he's seeing a shrink, so they're trying to get him to kill him. And also the FBI's using an informant from within the family to tell Billy Crystal that, you know, Vidi's about to kill him when he's really not. They're like cutting and splicing audio to make
those
these fake
dirty
audios.
Cops. Those fucking dirty cops, man.
Yeah. Always twisting the truth.
No, then he has the meltdown eventually because of the commercial, and Jelly can't get the boss to leave, so he does the next best thing. He goes to get the doctor again. That's what I was going to say. You mentioned that, like, he gets kidnapped like 6 or 7 times throughout this movie where, like, he's in the middle of, like, very clearly something in his life. And, like, either Jelly or Vidi just, like, stroll up and they're like, hey, you got to come with me. And he's like, and literally, when he's getting married and Jelly's, like, in the bushes, like, psst, Doc, Doc, come here. And he's like, what the fuck are you doing?
2 times is his wedding, twice while sleeping, once while at SeaWorld. I think there's 2 other times, but
sure. But so he Jelly tells him that the boss can't go, and then he's got to go in his place. And Billy Crystal, of course, is like, "What the fuck are you talking about?"
And me, like, as a watcher, is like, "What the fuck are you talking about?"
Yeah. And again, just like the double wedding thing, we hand wave enough to where we don't care. We get the vaguest of, like, Jelly says, no, I'm a moron, and they all know I'm a moron. And, like, that's good enough for me. We've got the explanation. It's done. It makes sense in universe. I don't care. Okay, so Billy Crystal does have to do this thing.
Don't need any more than that.
Billy Crystal goes up and fucking nails it. You think. But actually, he didn't nail it, Shawnee. This whole speech. Did you know that? Did you research that?
No.
After they did this whole thing, they filmed it all in New York with all everybody there at the tables. And they were down shooting the stuff in Florida, and De Niro watched it. And he's like, this is all wrong. He didn't like the way that Billy Crystal hit Jelly. He said he was too soft. You got to go harder. So they reshot the scenes with just Jelly, Billy Crystal, and Chaz Palminteri. And that's why, like, he really is fucking slapping the shit out of him.
He smacks the shit out of him.
It really does. And that's all because Bob De Niro didn't like the first ones. So they made him do it again and fucking lay into him.
I saw that somewhere I had seen a clip that he wanted, as crazy as this is to sound with the premise that we just described, that De Niro wanted this to be, like, as realistic as possible.
Yep.
At least those scenes or anything that's mafia related, which you can absolutely get the sense of while watching it. It's just an outrageous it's not even outrageous. It's the circumstances and the interactions between him and the doctor that are outrageous. But everything else seems pretty fucking grounded.
It's a very grounded comedy. And, I mean, outside of the eccentricness of Billy Crystal, which is what you're watching Billy Crystal for. It's played very, very straight throughout. And I think that's another aspect that works well for it as a movie and as a comedy. Because I've seen this movie a handful of times, but it was a fucking joy to watch from start to finish. It was entertaining from the moment it kicked off. You're having a good time. I think what it's a short hour. What
40, it's an hour 30? 45.
Yeah, it cooks right along, man. You don't mm-hmm. feel it. It's enjoyable all throughout. You don't feel your time's wasted. You laugh a lot.
Mm-hmm. This is anytime I boot up a movie for this podcast. If it's over an hour and a half, I kind of like internally groan and I'm like, ugh. Especially on a day like today. Today was 60 degrees, sure. Clear blue skies. Though I was tired, so I didn't mind just laying in bed watching a movie.
But, and it was a good one.
The hour and 40 absolutely flew. And I like that this isn't a movie where, like, he's a mob boss. It's not like at the end of the movie, he's just getting off scot-free.
Yeah.
He still goes to prison, as he should, for everything that's going on. As much as you hate him at the beginning of the movie, and by the end, you're just so endeared to his character, mm-hmm. I've still, like, a smile, nodded, and I'm like, yeah, you go to prison for 18 months, you filthy gangster.
I love when he's asking him about his guma and he's cheating on his wife and he's like, why couldn't you do those things with his wife? He's like, hey, she kisses my kids with that mouth. Come on.
The whole, like, it was an actual curiosity. He's like, oh, we're not talking about that. He's like, I'm genuinely curious. Why do you have a girlfriend? Uh-huh. And
well, can you just do those things with your wife? Hey, she kisses my kids goodnight with that mouth. Come on.
Yeah. It made complete sense for a dude that's got all that power. Sure. It makes complete sense.
Whatever. Yeah. It was, I mean, yeah. Do your it was thing. Just like, come on.
He had a reason.
But, yeah.
Jesus.
But yeah, man. I'm glad you fucking like this movie, Shawnee boy. I'm glad that it ruled. Also was a tie into your dad. That's a cool little bonus fact.
Yeah. Between this and A Whole Nine Yards, I know the two of them. Like, I'm thrilled to watch either both of them, just kind of because in the back of my head, I know it goes back to something my dad really, really loved. It's like the whole when we started doing Lethal Weapon. I was psyched to watch that because I knew how much he loved those. And I
That's awesome.
Got to see why he liked those movies so much. Mm-hmm. I get it with this movie. I'm super hype. And also, I'm super hype for the next one, though I know there's no possible way. Like, this is one of those circumstances that all that this one can be is diminished returns. Like, past this, I don't know how you can do something better than this without it just feeling like a tacked on extra, but I don't care. Give it to me.
I'm trying to remember. That's what I'm excited that we're doing this thing too. Cause I've seen all four of these movies, but that's the thing. Like, I remember all four of them being good. Like, the sequels, from what I remember, don't diminish. They are, I don't know if they actually enhance, but they are at least continuations. So.
Yo, hold up. Jelly's in the next one, too?
Yeah.
I'm already sold. Lisa Kudrow, yeah. De Niro, Crystal, Jelly.
That's all you need, baby. Yeah, Jelly's in the second one.
Sick.
Because I think they make another reference joke to him getting slapped. And, like, it's one of those where, like, they make, and he's like, hey, don't you do it again. You got off those times.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember. But I'll be curious to see where we go with it. If they do hold up. That's why we're here. We're reviewing these fucking movies, y'all. So
hell yeah.
On that note, I think Sean and I are both big fucking watch it.
Yeah, big watch it. We'll get to the rating in a minute. I'm curious if you have a couple of standout comedy scenes that you wanted to bring up. Moments that really made you laugh out loud while watching this movie.
When he slaps Jelly is fucking hilarious. It's so out of nowhere, so out of character that mm-hmm. it's shocking and it's hilarious. It's so dumb and telegraphed, but it's still so fucking funny when Bob is actually talking to Billy Crystal for the first time and he keeps referencing his friend. And then Billy Crystal, he says, this is you, right? And he's like, are you fucking stupid? I said it's my friend. And then he goes through his whole spiel and Billy Crystal's like, I just feel like you're
I'm going to go off on a limb here.
And say that's you. And then Bob's, he looks like he's really pissed. And then he goes,
you,
this is why you're you and I'm me, because you're really smart. And it's so, again, so dumb and so telegraphed, but just so fucking well executed. It made me, I laughed. I loved it.
And even in that, when he's talking about his friend, and he gets so specific, and he's like, yeah, my friend, he just like, randomly he'll cry for no reason. He can't sleep through the night. It's just like, bro, tell me you're talking about you without telling me you're talking about you.
So that shit's great. Really, I mean, almost any time. Oh, shit. When they fucking come home from their wedding and they have the fucking wedding gift of the 40-foot fountain in their front yard of their suburban home. I was telling Mandy, because we were watching it, I was like, this is literally like if somebody put this fucking fountain in front of our house. That's the neighborhood they live in.
Yeah.
And then it's amplified even more later when he has Tony Bennett performing in his front yard at the end. Just beautiful.
So
just beautiful.
Dude, so random. And like, I love how the FBI agents point out how absolutely ridiculous that this new fountain is in the front yard. Like, so are these the people who gave you a fountain or?
Yeah, it was a gift for the conclusion of a job well done.
Oh, so funny. I think those are fantastic. I also love the building up of Lisa's character getting so pissed through this entire movie that it eventually culminates in her being so mad at Vidi that she like starts verbally attacking him. And Vidi's like, oh, you're getting angry and it's making me angry. I don't want you to be angry. What are you doing? And she's like, damn right, I ain't angry. And like, she already knows his whole deal, but she's past the point of fucking caring. And that made me laugh. Another big
again,
thing
Lisa Kudrow
is when you have VD calling Chaz's character there, Primo. And he's sitting there. He's really pissed off. This is right after that first hit in Florida tries to go off. And he's like, okay, my best friend's been shot. They're trying to take me out, blah-de-blah. So he calls up Primo and he's talking, and you've got Sobel or Crystal's character there trying to coach him through what to say. And he's like, you know, I'm going to come to this meeting and I'm going to bring closure with me, bloody blah. And then it just starts escalating because he can't control his anger anymore. And so it just starts getting vile. And you got freaking Primo getting on the phone. He's like, fuck you. And it's just, I love how he's trying to surrender to Sobel's way of thinking and how to surrender yourself, but he just keeps falling back on what he knows. Yeah. To the point where just a few scenes later, he's like, man, normally if I'm mad, I just hit a pillow a couple times. Why don't you try that? So he pulls out a gun and shoots a pillow, like empties an entire clip. He goes, you feel better? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel better.
Yeah, I do actually.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Just on that subtle note, I love when he calls Chaz Palminteri and just the confusion between him and his like right hand guy. He's like, what's his name?
I need you to go find a dictionary and look up what closure is. I need to know what he's bringing.
Well, but before that, even when like he calls for the first time and he's just like, Bob De Niro's calling for you. He's like, Bob De Niro? He's like, yeah, he's on line one. And then, and then he's like, so he answers the phone and he's like, hello? He's very confused by it. As, like, because again,
because he should have been dead.
Well, not only that, but like these big mob guys, they don't call each other and talk directly, especially like that. And then for him to just call out of the blue, and then he's just like, yeah, so I feel a certain way about these things.
I'm feeling a little bit of anger about this.
I love that. I love when he's trying to throw off because he knows that Billy Crystal's wearing the wire. And he's like, did you take care of that thing and that other thing?
The first thing? Like, what about the second thing?
The first thing or the second thing? Yeah. And the way they play off of that again.
I like how he brings that to the meeting. Billy Crystal brings that to the meeting and spins it back in Chaz's face. He's like, we talking about thing number one or thing number two? He's like, what are you talking about, thing number two?
Yeah.
And then he starts psychoanalyzing Chaz in the middle of the meeting. Dude, that had me dying. Where he's like,
that's good shit, man.
So why don't you want us talking about you? Do you not feel like you're good enough for us to be talking about you? So, dude, I could just ramble on about this movie.
I know, but I think we should hit it with our unique patented rating system that is devised on the fly.
Yeah.
And unique to every episode.
Yeah.
So on the fly that I haven't thought of mine yet.
I got one.
Okay. I think I've got mine too, but we'll see where you go. Go ahead, okay. Buddy.
Kyle.
Okay. Yeah, buddy.
You're a big old manly mob boss. You're man. Okay. No flaws, sure. No weakness at all. Okay.
Like this.
Don't tell Mandy, but you're getting with your girlfriend. Okay.
Okay.
You can't get it up. And this is deeply alarming to you because you're a man.
Yeah.
They're animals in this family. Before. You're a man. So you got to fly down to Florida right now and you got to drag your shrink out of bed with his fiance to come have a meeting with you. And you're explaining to him that this has never happened before, except for that one time that you had a lot of dinner, but that doesn't count. And the other time. So twice, but actually it's 8 times.
Yeah. That was a good bit too.
Dude, that was so funny when it just kept getting higher in number because he didn't want to admit it.
So twice. He's like, 8 times.
Yeah, you can count.
8.
So 2 times? All right, yeah, you can count. Yeah, so on a scale out of 1 to 8 times that you couldn't get it up.
Sure. Well, this is actually perfect because I'm going to give this a 7 and a chub where I can kind of. So it's 7.5.
Nice.
Out of 8.
7 and a softie.
A nearly perfect movie. I'm going to try to not be so goddamn generous, even though I'd be hard pressed to find a flaw in this movie. It's fun. It's fantastic. It's casual. I loved everything about it. It's great. I think anybody who watches this movie could watch it, could understand it, could have a good time, and could come away with a little bit saltier of a vocabulary, but a little bit more understanding in their heart. So yeah, 7 with a chub.
I think that's a fantastic rating.
Sean.
Yo.
Flip side, you are a small, neurotic psychiatrist who dresses in fluffy sweaters and cardigans. You, I know, that's why I added
that. Literally me.
But you, as this fantastic psychiatrist, have also been, are you ready for this number? Kidnapped 8 separate times within this week.
Dang.
Boy. Yeah, by the same mafia boss who is also your client. So he doesn't hurt you in these kidnappings, but you are taken away from places against your will, sometimes woken up in the middle of the night. Shawnee, on a scale of 1 to 8 casual kidnappings, what are you giving this movie?
So I think it's really hard when you only have 8 to work with, because if you're not going the full rock hard 8, it feels like it's really getting dinged. Like 7 out of 8 is definitely not the same as 9 out of 10, right? So it's, you know, you have much more.
It doesn't sound the same. I'll give you that.
It doesn't sound the same. And if you actually break down the math, it's really not the same. 3 out of 4 is not the same as 9 out of 10. That's 8 out of 10. Or 6 out of 8. Yeah.
Is it? Okay.
4 out of 5 is 8 out of 10.
Okay.
You know, when you break it down like that. So I'm going to say, because I can't do 7 on this, like, I really enjoyed this movie. Like you said, it's hard to really find a fault in this. And at an hour and 43 minutes of a movie, it flew by. I would happily have this on my shelf to snag off and just watch on a lazy Saturday afternoon if I wanted some laughs and just a nice, like, kick back on the couch on a Sunday afternoon, maybe not a Saturday, but like a Sunday afternoon, and I want to have some laughs. This movie's amazing. I'm going to give it I'm being kidnapped casually 7 times. And then I'm just like, the 8th time that they show up, like I don't get kidnapped. I just grab my pants and I toss them on. I'm like, let's go.
You're on the stairs tying your shoes when they roll up, and you're like, hey, guys, are you ready? Let's go.
So I didn't get kidnapped, so I can't get the full thing. Sure. I just, like, willingly go with them.
I got you, baby. Yeah.
So seven kidnaps and a willing escort.
A willing escort. I love it.
I really do love our rating systems that
I know it's
you can really feel how much you enjoy the movie about it. It's like, man, how much do I really like this? Yeah. Let me get kidnapped a bunch of times.
That's good stuff.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, well, I guess the next question, do you want to do the sequel next or do you want to dive into the whole nine yards and then we'll go back and do sequels?
Okay. So I'm of two minds here. If like we watch the sequel, then I'm like done with this series and I have nothing to look forward to in the series. But also, like, I just want to watch the sequel to this movie. It's one
right,
of those,
I feel ya.
It's one of those things where I don't want to stop living in these in this character's worlds. Mm-hmm. So like I kind of want to just do the sequel.
Okay.
You want to do that?
We can do that. You will still you'll get a whole week to prepare because we will not be doing an episode next week because I will be out of the country.
Yo, Bermuda, baby.
Going on my vacation, y'all. I will
Let's fucking go.
Out the country, so don't come rob me, you jackals.
Yeah.
So yeah, we will be taking next week off. We will not be releasing an episode. And then we'll come back and we will do the sequel, analyze that.
I am very excited, Kyle. I hope you have the most awesomest of times while you're doing Bermuda, yeah?
Bahamas? I mean, that's the B place. There we go. I was trying to be vague enough anyways. And when you said that, I was like, yeah, that one works.
Man, you're nice. I would have been like,
the tropical
idiot.
Place that starts with a B. That place is where we're going. I don't know how you don't have a good time in paradise.
Yeah.
But we'll see. If you can, I'll find a way.
Put up a parking lot.
No, I'm joking. I'm joking. Until then, Shawnee, what do you think the audience can go do?
Go analyze themselves. Or analyze themselves. I've got this.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle, I want you to put yourself in this movie, right? Where you have one of two options. You can either be a shrink who is living kind of living in a middling practice, just hearing about people's depressing marital woes and boring sex lives, nothing really, just helping the most mundane of things. And one day you're just thrust upon this mob world where you are at the beck and call of a big old mob boss and your life is always kind of in question. Or you can be this mob boss who feels like he is always on the brink of being taken out. And also realize he needs help. Which person would you rather be?
I mean, as myself, being me in both of these character shoes, I think I'd still rather take the psychiatrist's place. I'm not cut out for the mobster life, man. I am not mean. I'm not harsh. I'm not cutthroat. It's high pressure. Everybody's looking at you. Everybody's judging you. Even your friends are judging you, thinking you're not doing it. Yeah, fuck that, man.
Your friends are constantly turning on you.
Yeah, even as the psychiatrist, you got to hedge your bets on the fact that this guy's probably going to die young or go to prison early.
Yeah.
Chances are high for that, so.
I didn't touch upon it in the show, but I spent, like, the good part of this movie thinking about, like, you know, doctor-patient confidentiality.
Confidentiality, uh-huh. Yeah.
Like way too much about this movie through this movie while watching it. I'm like, it doesn't matter with the feds. Like they're covered. It's good.
They don't give a fuck, dude. Yeah. They wrote the confidentiality.
Damn.
Ugh.
Well, Have fun, dude. Love you guys.
Thanks, buddy.